Someone has said, sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you ever wanted to pay. But it doesn't have to be that way. Join us for our new series, Rift, The Problem with Sin, as we take a look at something we'd prefer not to have to deal with. Sin, what it is, where it leads, and what has been done about it. And now, here's today's message.
We are in a series called Rift. This is the fourth week of Rift. We've been going through and talking about the problems with sin. Because, as I said last week, if we can be honest, and that's not a problem of mine, sin can look nice, sin can be appealing. At times, sin can start out as fun, but then we realize that there are a lot of problems with sin, and so we've been going through week by week and talking about the different problems with sin. The biggest one is that it separates us from God. That is the biggest problem with sin, is it creates a separation between us and God. And so we have the Trinity symbol over there representing God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. We have humanity over here, and we're separated when we sin. And then in week two, we said, we don't like to call it sin. We don't like to call our own sin sin. We're usually pretty good at calling other people's sin out for that. And so we talked about calling it sin and addressing that and saying, if you want to change something, you have to start by identifying the problem. And then last week, week three, I was up here with you, and I said one of the big problems with sin are the consequences. You know, one of the big problems are paying that price over and over again when the eternal price for your sin has already been paid. And as always, you can find those on our app. You can find them on our website, our Vimeo channel. They're all over. I hope that you, if you miss a week or if there's a week that really connects with you, send it on to somebody. Share that with them. And then I'm excited for you to hear next week about the problem with sin and how that relates to Easter. But today, we're going to talk about the fourth problem with sin. And here's the problem. It's a progression. Sin is a progression, and that's a really serious problem. If you remember last week, I gave you this old quote, and I said, sin will take you farther than you want to go. It'll keep you longer than you want to stay, and it will cost you more than you want to pay. And last week, we really focused on the cost part. This week, we're going to focus on the first two parts of that, that it will take you farther than you want to go, and it will keep you longer than you want to stay. So here's the main point. Sin is always progressive. It's always progressive. It's never satisfied, and any efforts to contain it are strictly in vain. Sin is a progression. It's not a stagnant thing. It's a moving thing. It's a thing that is always trying to take more ground. Think of it like this. Sin is much more like a toddler than an infant, right? My apologies to the toddlers in the room. But if you have a toddler, that goes quite a ways. Because when you have an infant, it's awesome. They stay where you put them. Right, you have this tiny little baby, you put in a little chair, like they cry and stuff, but they stay where you put them. And that's a wonderful thing that you don't properly appreciate until they start moving all over and ruining your house. I remember, like, right after Kinsley was born, my second daughter, Grace was in the full throes of the terrible twos, and we got her to bed, and we're like, oh, my goodness. And we look, and there's this little infant sitting calmly in a chair, and we were like, why did we think this was hard? Like, there was a point where we thought this was a big deal. Now it's like nothing, right? Because they don't move anywhere. And that sin is like a toddler. It doesn't stay where you put it. You put it somewhere and you think, all right, this is what I've got. And it progresses and it moves. You can't dabble in sin. You don't mess around with sin. You don't just mess around with it and say, oh, I'm going to sin for this long and then I'm going to walk away. Or here's my plan. Here's what I'm going to do and then I'm going to get out. In the Bible, when talking about sin, uses some very strong phrasing about the topic. John 8:34, Jesus replied to the people that he was with, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. That's a strong word, isn't it, to say you're a slave to something? That's not a dabbling. That's not a playing around. That's not a, well, I'll just keep this as long as I want to. And then in the book of Galatians, chapter 5, right at the beginning, verse 1, Paul says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Again, he said, if we sin, we become slaves to sin. Sin is not light, sin is not fun, sin is not easy. Because when you think about slavery, you don't dabble in slavery, right? I mean, slavery is a pretty serious thing. Masters didn't send their slaves out. They didn't give them freedom and say, you guys go and enjoy your weekend. You've worked hard. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you right back here Monday morning, all right? We're going to have a great week. No, that's not how slavery worked. If you were a slave, you were in all the time, A slave was a slave at all points. And that is the imagery that Jesus and then Paul and sometimes Peter uses to talk about sin in our lives. But the devil would love to convince you, and he has probably convinced many of us at times in our lives, probably some of you right now, that sin is just a little part-time side venture that we can get into. That sin is just a little something you can do on the side, and it's not going to affect your family, it's not going to affect your life, it's not going to affect everything else. You just have this little sin over here that you just keep in a box to yourself. Satan is just hoping that you will believe that enough to leave that door ajar, to leave that door open just a little bit, even ever so slightly, so that he can get his foot in. He is more than happy to start on the ground floor and work his way up. That's how he works. Satan is not applying for a management position in your company. He's like, no, that's cool, man. Just let me start in the mailroom, right? And I'll get promotion after promotion after promotion. That's all he wants to do is just get his foot in the door, just get in a little bit, and go from there. And that's because sin is like a disease. It's like a disease. It just needs to get in to get started. So you just need to let it in a little bit so we can get started. You know, your doctor hopefully would not say, and if they do say this, you got to find a new doctor. Your doctor wouldn't say, well, listen, I've got bad news. You've got cancer. The good news is it's just a little bit, so it's good. Go out and enjoy your day, right? The doctor, they better not say that. They would say, all right, this is good. We caught it early, and we're going to eradicate it quickly. It wouldn't say, like, it's just a little bit of cancer, right? It's the same thing with sin. It's not just a little bit of sin. The good news is if it's there, it's easier to treat. But we don't just passively walk around and say, no, it's just a little bit. It's because it's like a disease, and once it gets in, it gets started. And this is one of those areas where Satan plays the game so very well. He plays the game so well, and I don't want to give him too much credit because he has been defeated, and he holds no power over someone whose life is in Jesus Christ. And all right, there you go. Some people said amen. We don't always do that, but if you're going to, that was a really good time to do it. So I don't want to give him too much credit because he's been defeated, and he knows that, and we know that. But there are some things that he does very, very well, and this is one of them. Because this is exactly the thing that Satan wants to do to you today. This is what he's been desperately trying to do to you lately, to get you to leave the door of your life just the slightest bit open, just slightly ajar. Because he's pretty smart. I don't think that he would ever say, don't read your Bible for a year. Because if he said that to you, you'd be like, that's crazy. But he would say, oh, I mean, just not today, right? I mean, just don't read it today. And then a couple days stack up. I don't think that the devil would say to someone, hey, let's get to the point where you're dependent on alcohol, either to get through the day or just to have a fun time. I don't think he would say that. But what I think that voice sounds like is, well, certainly you deserve to blow off a little steam tonight. I don't think that the devil would say to Christ followers, hey, you should cheat on your wife. Why? Because most people, the defenses would go right up. But he'd say, you know, what's so wrong about just looking at other women? And I don't think that the devil would say, hey, good idea, become a drug addict. Become a drug addict to the point that it totally wrecks your life and puts you in jail and abandons all the people that love you. I don't think the devil would say that. But you know what he would say? Pot's harmless. I heard that on the news, that pot is harmless. So, I mean, what's the problem with that? Those are those little nudges. Those are the little cracks in the door that he tries to get you to leave open. Side note about this, because we're kind of on the topic. You will be told over and over in society that pornography and marijuana are harmless. And the reason that society wants you to believe that is because those two things are huge gateways to much bigger problems. I'm not telling you that if you smoke marijuana that you will become a drug addict. I'm telling you every drug addict I've sat with in jail started with marijuana. I'm not telling you that if you look at pornography that you will become some kind of sexual deviant. I'm telling you that every sexual deviant began by looking at pornography. Those are cracks in the door that you leave a little bit ajar that you're told will not harm you, and they get out of control, and they go to places you never intended them to go. And you need to know that. If they're going to tell you that on the news, I'm going to tell you the truth here. Those things are not harmless, and that's how the devil works. That's how he works. Just give me a little bit. And that's what we need to be listening for. That's what we need to keep our eyes open for. Those places where he nudges us, where he tries to get us to go off course ever so slightly. And a lot of times those things sound like, well, why not? Who's it going to hurt? Or it sounds like, oh, please, you know that he or she is doing way worse than this. A lot of times it's, you deserve it. You know, or is it really that bad? All those voices. And when you hear those things, your defenses need to go up because the great deceiver is trying to deceive you. He's trying to get you to let your guard down. He's trying to get you to leave that door open just a crack. But we know that whatever we starve dies, and whatever we feed grows. And so we know that if we have our sinful nature, as the Bible calls it frequently, our old nature, and we think, well, I'm just going to feed it a little bit, right? I'm just going to feed it a little bit. It grows and it grows and it grows. Or we can starve it and it dies. And the same thing will be true with your walk with Jesus Christ. If you feed it, it will grow. If you starve it, it will wither up and it will die. I mean, you can test this out with a plant. You can test it out with an animal too, but I wouldn't recommend that. That's not good. But that's how it works. We know this throughout life. Starve something and it dies, feed something and it grows. So don't think that you're just going to feed the sin a little bit to get it to go through, because it's going to grow and it's going to take over. Sin is a progression. It doesn't just take the space that we try and give it. It fights and it claws and it pushes for more and more. It is never satisfied. You will never satisfy sinful nature. The only thing that you can do is starve it and kill it. It's like a real estate developer buying a property where they're saying, like, all right, we're going to put in this mall, you know, and they've got to acquire all the land. They're not like, well, we got a couple properties. No, you've got to get them all. You've got to buy the entire street. You've got to buy that whole section. You ever see that picture? I think it was in Seattle or Chicago, one of the two, where there's like this huge mall and this one little house right in the middle. That lady's awesome. But that's like real estate developers aren't like, that's cool, we got the whole thing. But this one lady, you know that they were just counting the days, right? I'd have somebody test her food if I was her. But that's how it works. It's like we need more and more and more. Now, I know what you're asking. John, does there happen to be a biblical account that illustrates this perfectly? And yes, there is. Isn't that great? I'm so glad you asked that. It's in Genesis 37, and it's about Joseph and his brothers. And it illustrates this point because some of you probably know this story, but we're going to take a look at it. I always encourage you, I'm going to tell the story. I'm not going to read the actual verses. You're welcome to open it now and follow along. You're welcome to read it later. I always try and make it a little more modern and understandable for us, but we'll keep the facts the same. Because it starts out by talking about Jacob. And Jacob, he was from where his father was from. That was their hometown. It's where they'd been. They lived in Canaan. And he had a whole bunch of kids, 12 boys to be exact, and at least a couple girls. Now, that's crazy. I got 3 kids. That's plenty. I'm good. 3 is good. God bless the people that have more than that. You're either crazier than me, more patient than me, something. I don't know, but I admire you. Jacob had 12 boys and at least a few girls. So one of his sons, Joseph, was 17, and he spent a lot of time taking care of the flocks with his brothers. And he really becomes the central focus of his family's story. And Jacob, sometimes they call him Israel, the dad, it says that he loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, which isn't a good thing. You shouldn't have favorites to the point that they can put it clearly in your biography, okay? Just a side note. But it says he loved him more because he was born to him at an old age, which I also think is kind of funny because I'd be like, man, I wanted to retire and now we got this other kid. Like, that keeps resetting the clock, right? But Jacob didn't think like that. He loved Joseph because he was born to him in his old age. So because he was his favorite, obviously he made him this ornate robe, right? Which doesn't really fit for us. So let's say it this way. Joseph had an iPhone 7 and all the brothers had like a 4S still. And they're like, Dad, let us get the upgrade here, you know? Joseph's got the 7 and looks pretty good. So when his brothers, they saw that the father loved Joseph more than all of them. And guess what happened? They hated him because of that. It says they could not speak a kind word to him. And Joseph, truthfully, Joseph didn't do a lot to make it better. Joseph wasn't really smooth in the waters here. One day he tells him, guys, I had this awesome dream. Here's what happened. We were all out binding grain in the field, and suddenly my grain rose up, and all of your grain bowed down to mine. The brothers, they obviously don't love that, right? They're like, what are you talking about? Like, what, do you think you're better than us? You know, like, they didn't love that when he said that, and they're kind of upset. The passage says again that because of his dream, they hated him even more. And then he had another dream, and he makes a bad decision because he tells his brothers about this dream as well. He's like, hey, guys, I had another dream. You know, they're like, oh, that's great. Let's hear it. Like, pound this punk. He's like, this time, the sun and the moon and 11 stars, they all bowed down to me. And this time his dad hears it, which is kind of funny because his dad's like, hey, Joseph, you might want to lay low on that dream stuff for a little while. Like, this isn't good. And by the way, are you saying that your mom and I are going to bow down to you too? Like, that's why don't you slow this down a little bit? And so later on, his brothers are out with the flocks. And Jacob asked Joseph, hey, go out, check in with them, make sure everything's good, report back to me, and just let me know how things are going. And Joseph's like, all right, Dad, I can do that. And so when he's going out to find his brothers, they look up and they see him from a ways off. They see him in the distance, and that gives them some time to begin to scheme against him as he's walking up. They're saying, oh, there he is. Like, there's Mr. Dreamer. Here he comes. Can't wait to hear what he's got to say today. You know what we should do to that little punk? Let's kill him, and let's throw him into one of the cisterns, and then we'll just say a ferocious animal ate him, and then we'll see what becomes of his big dreams. And Reuben, good for Reuben, he's like, oh, man, yeah, guys, that's good. That's hilarious. But seriously, let's not take his life. Like, maybe we should make no bloodshed, like, a goal of this, you know? Like, I don't know, give him a killer wedgie or something. Let's maybe not kill him. It feels like a bad idea. We could just throw him into a cistern and leave him there. And he said that because his plan was to come back later and get him and return him to his dad. So here comes Joseph. He comes strolling up to the brothers and like, hey, you know, probably dropped one of those working hard or hardly working lines on him. He seems like that kind of guy. And as soon as they see him, they take him. They beat him. They strip him of his robe and they throw him into a cistern. Throw him down to this big hole. And then they sit down for a meal because, I mean, mugging your brother is exhausting. So as soon as they finish and they're like, let's get some grub. And as they sit down, they look up and they see this caravan of Ishmaelites coming their way. And their camels are all loaded up with goods. And it's pretty apparent that they are traveling to Egypt on one of the trade routes to sell some things there. And so Judah says, guys, listen, this is great. It's not a smart business decision for us to kill him. All right? So let's just do this. Let's make a smart choice here and let's sell him to these people. And this is a direct quote. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. Now, you might not like your brother that much, but if the only brother that stands up for you is using the line of, let's not kill him, let's sell him into slavery. I mean, after all, he is our brother. You got some rough brothers, okay? But that's what Judah said. He's like, no, guys, we're not even going to make any money if we kill him. So the merchants come by, the brothers pull Joseph out, and they sell him for 20 shekels of silver. And the Ishmaelites take Joseph off to Egypt. And now, as frequently happens with sin, they've completed that, and they have to begin the cover-up process. So they take Joseph's robe, they slaughter a goat. Goat's like, what did I do? They slaughter the goat so they can dip the robe in blood, and they take the robe back to their father, and they say, we found this. Do you think this might be your son's robe? Like, they don't say it might be our brother's robe, it might be Joseph. Like, oh yeah, your son. And Jacob, of course, he recognizes it, and he says, it is my son's robe. Obviously, a ferocious animal has devoured him, and he's been torn to pieces. And the passage tells us that Jacob mourned for his son for many days. And it also says that his sons and his daughters, they came around him to comfort him, to mourn with him, but he refused to be comforted. Jacob said, no, I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave. Now, obviously, when we look at that, that really escalated quickly, right? I mean, that really got out of hand. And there's a progression here from where it starts to where it goes. Look at this. Well, let's go through this real quick. It starts in verse 4, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Then in verses 5 and 8, they hated him all the more. Now, who among us has not hated their sibling at some point, right? I mean, you know, if you're currently living in the same house as your brothers and sisters, I'm going to tell you this, that's tough. You won't fully appreciate them until you live under different roofs. And then you'll be like, you know what? They weren't so bad when I don't have to see them every day. My oldest sister lives in California. We did not get along well when we lived together. You put a country between us, we're great friends now. It's perfect. So, I mean, most of us at some point could say, yeah, I've had some hatred or some jealousy in my heart for one of my siblings. Because it goes on in 11, they were jealous of him. And it starts to take a pretty bad turn because in verse 18, they plotted to kill him. In verse 23, they strip him of his robe. And then in 24, they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now, Who among us has not thrown their sibling into a cistern at some point? No, okay. Well, good. You didn't raise your hand. I guess that's good. So then it goes on. They sell him for 20 shekels. They slaughter a goat for blood to put on his robe. They take the robe to their father and they lie to him. And then this one really bothered me as I went through. They watch their father grieve and mourn. They watched their dad just be devastated and heartbroken as he tried to process the apparent loss of his son. And if they had an ounce of feeling or love for their dad, wouldn't they have said, all right, Dad, actually, you know what? That's not what happened. We got a little wound up and we sold him to some people. We could probably get him back for like 30 shekels of silver. You know, they're going to want a profit of this. We could run them down. We could catch them. At no point do they do that. At no point do they say, Dad, we made a really bad mistake. We're really sorry. He's actually not dead. We can maybe track him down. No, they don't do that. They continue the lie. And I want to tell you that when we sin, it doesn't just impact us. So often we think with sin, it doesn't impact anybody else. Look at how their sin impacted their dad. And then how it impacted their relationship with their dad. You think that things were cool between them and their dad when they knew what they had done, when they knew how they had lied? And that is what the devil is looking for. Just like he had with Joseph's brothers, it's just that little crack in the door so he can sneak in, so he can get a foothold. Ephesians 4, 26 and 27, when talking about anger, here's what Paul said, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. He's saying when you have anger and you have hatred in your heart, you're just letting the devil get a grip in there. And for the brothers, that grip was hatred in their hearts, and it grew, and it progressed, and it took hold. And truthfully, I think it led them to a place where they probably never thought that they would go. Did they hate their brother? Yeah, but did they think that they were going to sell him and ruin their dad's life and lie to his face over and over again? Probably not. I hope not. But it grabbed a hold and it took him to a place that they never imagined. And man, I've seen that way more than I ever would want to. I've seen that in people's lives. I've seen people who thought that they could mess around with sin, that they could ride the ride as long as they wanted to and then get out, and they found out that that was wrong. I've seen people who become so wrapped up in sin that they begin to not even look like the same person anymore. I don't mean like their hair changed or their clothes. I mean the life was gone from their eyes, that their appearance changed, that they looked around and they ended up in a place that they probably never imagined that they would go. Time and time again, I've watched people who think that they can just flirt with sin and walk away unscathed, and it takes them farther than they want to go, and it keeps them longer than they want to stay. And so hopefully at this point, that's so clear, it's so obvious that we can't do that, that you're asking yourself, well, how on earth do people continue to fall for that trick? I mean, it's the oldest trick in the book. The devil's been running the same play his entire existence. How do we fall for that? I'll show you how. It's right here. It's that little guy. That's the answer. Isn't he cute? He is such a cute little fella. That's a baby lion, okay? This is not a cat. It's from the cat family, but if you go to PetSmart and they have one of those, don't take it. And also later call somebody and let them know that PetSmart's selling baby lions. But that's a baby lion, and he's so cute, and he's so cuddly, and he's so harmless, isn't he? Wouldn't you want to take one of those into your home? I would venture a guess that he could not do any more damage than my chocolate lab did when he was a puppy, right? I put him head to head. He could not do much more damage than a chocolate lab. But we look at that and we think, well, that's a cute little lion. That's manageable, right? Surely if I bring this into my home, it will be fine and everything will go well. But in James chapter 1, he tells us about sin, that after desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin. And that sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. And suddenly, that cute little baby lion, it turns into one of these, right? Not nearly as cute. I hope that whoever took this had a really awesome lens on their camera. Either that or it's the last picture that they ever took. Because all of a sudden, it's not so cute. All of a sudden, this thing that was cute and cuddly and harmless that we thought we could manage, that we thought, well, I don't know, we could maybe take it into the home for a little while, ends up being this ferocious, vicious lion. In Peter, 1 Peter 5:8, he tells us, be alert and of sober mind. Why? Because your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. But the key is he doesn't start like that. He doesn't start like this roaring lion. He starts like this cute, cuddly little baby lion that we think, oh, it'll be okay. Come on, come on in, cutie. Look at that guy. I'm not even a cat person, and that's really cute. So, what are the baby lions that you've let into your life? What are the baby lions that you've let into your house that you looked at that and you said, I can handle that. I can handle some hatred. Yeah, is there hatred in my heart for somebody? Yeah, but that's fine. It's not like I'm acting on it. I'm not doing anything about it. As I mentioned before, pornography. Listen, pornography is a baby lion. It's probably one of the most prevalent baby lions that people think that they can play with. Nothing's going to get hurt. No one's going to know. And it ends up taking over. It ends up becoming a roaring lion that will devour you. Substance abuse. You think you can just mess with it? Just mess with substance abuse a little bit. It's fine. I know a lot of people that do it. They're fine. I'll be fine. It's a baby lion that will mature into a roaring lion and that will devour you. Maybe especially married people, a relationship that has crossed some lines that it should not cross. You think, oh, we're just friends. Oh, yeah, we like to hang out. We just talk a lot. You know, we do this, we do that. And it crosses a line, and suddenly that baby lion turns into a killer. In Psalm 139, David said, search my heart and see if there is any offensive way in me. I would ask you to search your life and see if there are any baby lions in your life. Anything that you've opened the door to, that you've convinced yourself you can manage, you can handle, you can contain. Because that's our takeaway for today, is that sin cannot be contained. It cannot be contained. Kill it or it will take over. You need to kill it or it will take over. And the devil is just prowling around like a roaring lion, looking for something, for someone to devour. I mentioned my chocolate lab, and we quote this verse with him because we compare him to the devil. And you know what he does? He's seven, and he still steals things all the time. And you can actually learn a lot, though, from how he does it, because when he comes in, if he gets a little anxious, and he feels better if he ruins a toy or swallows a sock or something like that. I don't understand how that works. But what he'll do is you'll see him come in the house, and it's like this, it's a prowl, and he'll walk around, and he's looking. He looks all over. He wants to see if the girls have left a toy out, if the playroom gate is open. He wants to see if there's any food on the counter, and he'll just kind of prowl around, and he's looking for a place where we've let our guard down. He's looking for the plate that we forgot and left on the table. He's looking for one place where we've been lazy, where we've been soft, where we've left the door open for him so that he can steal something. And he prowls around looking for low-hanging fruit. And that is a perfect picture of what the devil does in our life. He comes through and he says, oh, look at this. They haven't opened their Bible in a while. Oh, look at where this is headed. Look at these people that they're hanging out with. There's some low-hanging fruit. There's a place I can find something to devour. But sin cannot be contained. We either need to kill it or it will take over. Sin, in many ways, is cancer. It will take over. If you get rid of it, it will take over unless we get rid of it. If you've got it, you have to get rid of it fully. You have to get rid of it completely. And you have to get rid of it as quickly as possible. Anything else is not a wise choice.
Thank you for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk and grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. For other great resources, explore our website at northgatefmc.com. And come back next week for another great message. Have a wonderful week.